Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on a profitable servant when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can we do to protect our lives, our liberties, and our properties from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out our substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, doesn't cost anything. And you can call and order one right now. Just get on the horn and give us a ring at 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and then send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Hey, we're talking about this thing of a profitable servant. Unemployment. It's bad and it's getting worse. In Argentina in 2003, the unemployment rate hit 62%. 62%. That's the bad news. Good news is 38% of people were working. The trick here is you wanted to be one of those 38% that were working rather than that 60% that was unemployed. Back in the last Great Depression here in the States, the unemployment rate, they tell us, topped out at around 25%. That's the bad news. Good news is 75% of those people are employed. Now, no matter how bad this depression becomes, there are always going to be people that are working. Now, that's the good news. Now, the bad news is you're going to be working for a lot less money. That's the bad news. But working for some money is better than being unemployed with no money. Back in the last depression, I can remember many of the old-timers telling me, Frank Rocha, for instance, said that when he came to this country, he hired on at $40 a month in board and room back in 1922. Now, $40 a month in board and room wasn't all that bad of money, if you'll stop and think about it now for a second. In gold terms, he was getting paid 1.25 ounces of gold per month. Gold at that time, well, it was better than that. Gold was $20.67 an ounce in 1922. He was getting paid 2 ounces of gold per month, which had the purchasing power in today's dollars of about $2,000 a month, plus board and room. So if you had a job paying you $2,000 a month in board and room, that wouldn't be too shabby. But his pay got cut by 30%, that's 25%. He went from $40 to $30 a month in 1933. So there was a pay cut that he had to sustain. And in talking to the old timers, most people had pay cuts, 10%, 20%. And that was the standard. Now, if you're going to take a pay cut, and you're not going to like the idea of taking a pay cut, I know General Motors suggested that to the United Auto Workers. They didn't think that was a very good idea. Well, of course, when you're the guy that's making or taking the cut, that doesn't sound like a good idea. But, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And we're now in a race to the bottom. And here's what you're constantly going to be faced with. Let's suppose that you're making $10 an hour. And you're working away here at your job. But the unemployment rate now is out around, last time I saw, it was around 18%, 17%, I believe it was, 17, 18. That includes all the people that are unemployed, drawing benefits, all the people that are underemployed. Those are the people that are PhDs serving coffee at Starbucks, and then the people who have already run through their unemployment benefits and are now no longer counted. Put them all together, and you get a pretty significant number. Now, that's already, we're already up here around pushing 20%, which is not too far below the 25% back in the 1930s. Now, the predictions are that it'll hit 40%. That's what they're all targeting here, 40%. And we're laying off people at the rate of about 600,000 a month, and that's about the rate that they expect layoffs to occur here in the United States through the balance of 2009. How many is that? Let's take 600,000 times 12. That'd be about 7 million jobs will be lost this year in the United States. Now, so far, we've lost about 5 million jobs over the last 18 months. So by the time we get through with Christmas 2009, we should be out around 12 million lost jobs. Now, that's going to affect a lot of people, 12 million people. That's the bad news. Now, the good news is there's about 100 million people in the workforce. So 88 million people will still be working. Right now, about 6 million are unemployed. So there's 92 to 94 million people that are employed. So they tell us. So there's going to be employment out there. I mean, you can rest assured, millions of people are going to be employed, and you want to be one of those employed people. That's simple enough. Now, let's explore some basic practical ways to accomplish that goal. So I've started off with a biblical parable. There's a lot said in the Bible about employment. I don't think the average preacher could find it with both hands at high noon and with a roadmap, but it's there. And so I thought I'd tell you about the parable here of the unjust steward. Parable of the unjust steward. That's over here in Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 12. So if you want to follow along, pick up a Bible there. It's Luke chapter 16. And starting out here in verse 1, it says, "And he said unto his disciples, There was a certain rich man, which had a steward. And the steward was accused that he had wasted his master's goods. So the master called his steward in, and he said to him, How is it that I hear this of thee? I want an account of your stewardship, for you may no longer be steward. I want an audit of the books. I want to see if you've been a just or an unjust steward. I'm not sure that we'd want to audit Bank of America or Citigroup or AIG now, would we? Do you think maybe those executives and those companies have been unjust stewards?" In verse 2, he says, or verse 3, he says, "So the steward said within himself," he's muttering to himself, he says, "What shall I do? Because the boss takes away from me the stewardship, and I cannot dig, I'm too lazy to work, and to beg, I am ashamed. Ah, I know, I'm resolved as to what to do, that when I'm put out of my stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and he said unto the first debtor, How much do you owe my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, Well, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then said he to another, And then how much do you owe? And he said, Well, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, Take your bill and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely. Because the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in least is unjust also in much. So if therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who then will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? Now no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Yeah, that's the story of the unjust steward. Notice, here's God says, hey, this guy's pretty damn smart. He's pretty damn wise, using his head. Now, that's dishonest, and I want to tell you that your boss, whoever you're working for, is no dummy. How do I know that? Because people don't get into the business world by being dumb. So you have to have some measure of intelligence, some measure of wisdom and understanding to get into the business world to start with. So businessmen are pretty well attuned to their employees. We're pretty well attuned to you employees stealing from us. We're not asleep here at the switch. Let me give you a little story here of an unjust steward that worked for me one time. He was my upholsterer. He was a wonderful upholsterer. I mean, this guy was really good. He could turn out more upholstered goods than anybody I had ever had working in the upholstery department of my plant. I mean, this guy was really good. So based upon what I've told you already, I made it a point to tell my plant manager, I said, I want to give that guy a raise. I want to boost his pay up. And that's because his productivity merits a pay raise, and I want to give it to him. Now, there's a couple of reasons why employers do this. When they have a guy that's good, really good, the employer says to himself, I need to pay this guy more money, because if I don't, some other employer is going to hear about how productive he is and hire him away from me. That's why. Now, employers are not out here fighting over the herd. you can forget that. They're not interested in the herd. Those are the unprofitable servants that just do what they're expected to do. They're not profitable. But this upholsterer, he was profitable. He not only made his wages, he was making me money. And I knew that if this guy, you know, if the word ever got out, you know, then American Waterbeds would want to hire him. And Pacific Frames and other companies out there, you know, would want this guy. And they would pay more money. He's worth it. All right. So I told my plant superintendent that, and he said, well, boss, before we give him this raise over here, I think you ought to know that I think he's stealing. I think he's a thief. I think he's walking out of the plant every day, stealing more than you're proposing to pay him. And I said, Rick, what makes you think he's stealing? And he said, well, and he told me three or four things over here. And I said, well, that's not good. So I said, let's set up a little trap here, and let's see if that's really true. And so now employers are constantly doing this to you employees. In case you didn't know this, we're constantly setting up little traps. That is, we're not watching everything that you do every minute, but every now and again, we take a sample. We take a sample of your productivity. We look at the records and books, and we make a judgment based upon the numbers that are coming out as to how much you're producing. We take a look, and we say, well, here's how many of this particular kind of hardware we're buying. And then we take a look at how many finished products we're selling, and we notice that based upon what we're buying and what's going out the door, it's getting paid for, that there's a shrinkage here. So right away, we can figure out that, you know, you employ might not know which one is stealing. And employees don't really care if the boss knows that there's theft going on. They just don't want to be identified as the thief. See? Now, for the rest of you employees out there, you need to understand that when there's theft going on, there's losses being accumulated. And when these losses accumulate to certain levels, well, then you know the axe is going to fall. And that's the way life is. So we set up a trap, and sure enough, we figured out this guy's stealing. Now I needed to find out, well, how much is he stealing? And the truth is, he wasn't stealing all that much, but he was definitely stealing. And so I looked at this employee and I said, well, if this guy is unfaithful in this little bit, this little job over here where he's at, he obviously is not qualified for a management position. I can't trust this guy in a management position because, you see, as you promote people up in the plant, they become more and more responsible. They have access to more and more goods. And you know, we have to make sure that this guy is honest. So this then immediately precluded him from any kind of promotion. That's the theft. So now the determination was, well, do we want to get rid of him? And the answer to that is no, we don't want to get rid of him. See, with what he's earning and with what he's stealing, he is producing just about where the herd produces. So we don't want to let him get into a position where he can steal more. So we're not going to promote him in the company. And now what we're going to do is we're going to start looking for a replacement. By and by, a replacement came up, and I informed the man that we were going to replace him. Then he asked me, he said, why? And I said, well, and I told him the story. And I told him the story so that in the future, he would be able to weigh his mistake and hopefully stop stealing. Because the theft, you see, did not go unnoticed. And if you're stealing from your company, it won't go unnoticed. Now, I have people come here to the law school from time to time, and I'm always disappointed when somebody steals from me. It happens, and I know it happens, and I watch for it, and sure enough, over time, I don't catch all the theft, but I only have to catch a stealing once. A man that steals once has been stealing for a long time because you don't catch this guy the first time out. So we don't know how much you're stealing, but we know that you're a thief, and so therefore, that's cannon fodder. You know, you're leaving here. So the upholstery man, I kept him for a while because I needed him. But I watched him. And then ultimately I replaced him. And then I explained to him why, so that he would know in the future. And you know, he never denied it. So he knew he got caught, and so that's fair and square, and away he went. So there's another little piece to the puzzle. This unjust steward that you're seeing here in Luke 11 was a thief. In fact, he went to his master's creditors, you know, like a CPA or an accountant. He says, well, what do you owe? The guy says, well, I owe 100 measures of oil. Good, write it down to 50. Ah, very wise, because now when he's put out of his stewardship, he'll go over and he'll go to work for the wine guy. Now, I had a little deal come up here one time. My hay supplier delivered a load of hay, and he lost the invoice to it, and some time went by, and we didn't get a bill. And so one day, my wife called him and said, hey, you didn't send us a bill for that load of hay. And he said, well, what load of hay? And my wife said, well, it was that load of hay, that load of alfalfa hay that you brought in. It was 32 bales, and they're all big 5x5 bales out of Iowa. And he got to looking around. And he said, well, he called back. He said, I don't have any invoice here on that. He said, I remember a truckload of hay coming in here. And he said, I don't have it here in the yard. And he said, well, I guess we must have delivered it to you. And so I said, well, that's right. You delivered it to us, and so we owe you for it. Now, what's the bill on it? And he said, well, I figured it out. So he did, figured it out. And So time went by, and we paid the bill. Now, I could have screwed him out of that $3,800. Sure I could. But the moral to the story is there's a law here that says thou shalt not steal. Now, if you steal from somebody, then the penalty, the scriptural penalty here is 2 times, 4 times, or 5 times the amount of the theft. Now, if I screwed him out of that $3,800, just put it down here, $3,800, the penalty is times 5. That's $19,000. So I got to pay $19,000 in restitution. And the way that restitution comes is when Michael the Archangel starts screwing up your business transactions. Customers that were going to buy from you don't buy. Your house burns down. The engine in your pickup blows up. And you got to pay $5,000 to put a new engine in. Then you got to pay for this and you got to pay for that until he gets the full $19,000. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. If you think you can steal and get away with it, you people have your heads up the wrong end of your anatomy. The law that says thou shalt not steal is a law. It's not a suggestion. That's not, gee, if you feel like it today, why don't you keep your hand out of your neighbor's bag? All right, so I paid the money for the hay, but it pays dividends. See, it pays dividends because now that businessman says, you know, that guy Gordon is honest. He didn't cheat me. He could have taken advantage of me, but he didn't. So now when deals come along, Lakey calls me and he says, hey, I got this truckload over here, George, and I'm going to pull it out and I'm going to give you this deal. I'm going to cut the price for you. So when deals come up, you know, he passes them along to here and there, but I'm one of the guys that gets one of those deals. See, what the honesty actually pays off over time, but it also saves you from the big loss. Now, the unjust steward over here lost his job. Why? Because he was a thief. So now he's going to go to work for or try to make business deals with the other creditors or with the other businessmen who are also thieves. And so birds of a feather flock together. Thieves stick together. Now go to Wall Street and take a look at the investment banks. All the bankers are thieves, and all the bankers are working together to steal from you, the taxpayer. See how that's coming down? All right, now the ultimate end of this is the collapse of the banking system. Just be patient. They'll all get their comeuppance. Meanwhile, back on the farm, that's why I don't deal with banks. Banks by themselves are criminal activities. So if you stay out of the banks, you stay out of that criminal activity. And there are benefits that come from that. All right, so let's take a look here. One time I had a guy, his name's Pat Connolly, comes into my office one day. He's an old-timey printer. I've known Pat for many years. And we're sitting here, and then he says, I've been looking at your invoices here, George. And they're four-part NCR paper. They don't need any carbon. And he said, they're really a good printing job. And he complimented me on these. He says, how much are you paying for these? And I said, 50 cents a piece. And he says, is there a minimum order? And I said, yeah, it's 500. Now, old Pat's an old-timey printer, and he said to me, well, I'll tell you what I want you to do, George. Now, he didn't ask me if I wanted to buy some from him. He said, here's what I want you to do. I'm gonna take one of these, if you don't mind. I'm going to take this home, and I want to see if I can set this up on my machine. Now, Pat was in the printing business for many years, and he left. He had the Postal Instant Press franchise there at Fairview and Curtis, as I recall, in Boise. And he took his equipment and he moved it into his garage. Now he's not licensed, bonded, or insured, and he's retired now from the printing business, but he's got the printing equipment. And he said, I'll print these for 25 cents each, half price, cash, of course. And I said, well, that sounds pretty good, Pat. Why don't you take one of those and, yeah, go ahead and print me up 500, about a three-month supply. And then he did. Brought it back. Now that was a salesman, and that's a salesman who sold me something that I needed and wanted and could use, something that I needed. And he put $125 net profit right onto my bottom line. Now, let me show you how that works. In order for me to make a dollar, I have to produce about $2 or $3 in order to pay my taxes, overhead, and expenses and make $1. For every dollar that we make, we have to earn $2 or $3 to make a dollar. But when you save a dollar, the dollar goes right straight to your profit line every time. It's much more profitable to save a dollar than it is to make a dollar. Much, much more profitable. And so Pat just put $125 in my pocket. Now that's a just steward. That's a profitable servant. That's a guy. Now you say, well, he didn't even work for you. Sure he did. Sure he did. He's a salesman. He's not an order taker. You see that girl in McDonald's, that's an order taker. That girl is not a salesperson. McDonald's has already made the sale when you walked in the door. When you walked into McDonald's, you intended to go in there and buy something. The girl or the boy standing behind the counter, they're just order takers taking the order. Pat Connolly was in my office, and he saw a need. He saw a need that he could fill. How much does it cost to turn out one of those invoices? I don't know. To this day, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure, knowing about printing and a little bit about this and that and another thing, that it's a pretty profitable business. And I'm sure that Pat could print those for less than 12 and a half cents a piece, so I know he had his Keystone markup in. But what about the guy that was charging me 50 cents, which was the standard going rate? You know, when you took it across the street to Eichmann printing, Eichmann wanted 50 cents an invoice. I never batted an eyeball. It's an incidental in the business world, does stationery and things like that. But, you know, it adds up to $125 four times a year. Now, that's, $500 a year, isn't it? And Pat Connolly now came in and sold me these invoices, which were just as good as Eichmann's, and saved me $500 a year and put it on my pocket. But he also put about $250 a year in his own pocket, didn't he? See that? In other words, both of us benefited from the transaction. Now, an unjust steward is somebody that's stealing from you. A just steward is somebody that's putting money in your pocket. Now, all of us are salesmen. If you're an employee driving a forklift in your factory, in your warehouse, if you're a truck driver driving down the highway working for Walmart, you are a salesman. And every day that you're on the job, you're selling your 8 hours or your 12 hours of labor. And somebody is buying that labor from you, buying your service. You're a service provider, and somebody's buying that service. Now, if somebody else comes in there and offers to sell the same service for less money, you are at risk of losing that customer. So if you're an employee and you're working for Walmart and you're driving a truck, you want to be one of the most profitable truck drivers that Walmart's got, because Walmart's going to cut back on their truck drivers. I was just talking to a student the other day, and he works for the Burlington Northern Railroad, and he said there's only two items that are selling. He said coal is one of them, and he said there was another one. I forgot what it was now. Coal and something else that the railroad is hauling. Well, that makes sense. See, all of the generators running on coal fire, they need the coal. They probably haven't cut back yet. But the containers coming from China into Long Beach and being hauled and distributed around the country, hey, that container business is way off. Practically non-existent. So watch what's going to happen. Burlington Northern's going to start having layoffs here pretty shortly, just like General Motors, just like everybody else. Burlington Railroad is not going to go out of business, and Burlington Railroad is not going to fire all of their employees, but they're going to get rid of a lot of them, just like everybody else. And you may be one of them. And that means that you may be out on the streets looking for a job. And that means that you may be out here selling. And if you're out here selling, there are people out there that want to buy, and they want to buy your service, and they want to buy your goods, but they want to pay as little as possible for it, just like I did. You know, if I could have got those invoices for a nickel apiece, I would have bought them for a nickel. If I have to pay 50 cents, then I have to pay 50 cents. When somebody comes and says, I'll sell it to you for a quarter, then I'm going to buy it from that guy for a quarter, you know, assuming that the quality is the same and so on. So you're always competing, whether you're a salesman or whether you're an employee or whether you're a businessman. You are always out there selling. And ultimately, the customer is going to dictate what the price is going to be. That's called the marketplace. Now, when we go into a depression, the marketplace is going to dictate the prices. Right now, the government and the banks are saying, well, we're going to dictate the prices. Well, okay. But I think in the final analysis, when all of these rescue packages and all these bailouts fail, which they always have in the past, they are now and will continue to in the future, when it's all said and done, the marketplace will take over. And when the marketplace takes over, then all of us communists out here have to wake up to reality. That means that we all have to go to work, and we all have to compete and produce. And the productivity is going to determine who works and who doesn't. That's the bottom line. All right, now I've got to give you a reminder here so that we can satisfy the Federal Communications Commission, and not just ours, but around the world. And so listen to this. You are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on our internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself by simply calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a profitable servant. Now, in the Bible, a lot is said about labor and labor relations. And as I said, here in the United States, we're losing employment here at the rate of about 600,000 jobs a month. That's about the rate that it's been going downhill at for the last October, November, December, January, February, 5 months. It's hit 500,000 jobs, half a million jobs a month. Now, we need to create 200,000 jobs a month. That's about 1,400,000 jobs a year just to stay even. So you've got that many people who are coming out of colleges and high schools and going into the labor market. I think it's 200,000 a month, 1,400,000 jobs a year. Now, I don't know if they're counting those or not, but you know, if you need to create, let's just multiply that out, 200,000 times 12 months is 2,400,000 jobs a year. So we need to be making 2,400,000, that's 2.5 million jobs a year. I said a month, but that's a year. And we're losing jobs at the rate of 600,000 a month. Now, if that continues on, you know, 600,000 times 12 months, and that would be 7,200,000 jobs. Now, it looks like to me that we should add that 2.4 million to the 7,200,000, shouldn't we? Now, if we do that, if we just take the year 2009, and we need 2,400,000 jobs for the people that are graduating from high school and college and so on, and the immigrants coming into the country, about 600,000 a year, as I recall, then we need to have those jobs. But we're losing jobs at the rate of 600,000 or 7 million. It looks like to me 7.2 and 2.4. Let's see if that's right. 2.4 and 7.2 is 9.6. It looks like about 9.5 million jobs that we need in the year 2009 aren't going to be there. Now, we're pushing up here toward 10 million people here in 2009. Now, those are certainly numbers bigger than little Georgie Gordon can solve. I'm not a Barack Obama. I'm not a Tim Geithner. And I'm not a Wall Street banker. But as an old-timey businessman, I can tell you what businessmen are looking for. And I know as a businessman what it is my customers are looking for. And I also know that if I can provide what my customers are looking for, they'll buy from me rather than you. You know, this is what competition's all about. So early on, I told you about the brown nose story. See, when I'm out here working, say, for Earl Sherman, the body company, and I'm giving up my coffee break. See, the rest of the guys, they work 7.5 hours a day, and I work 8. And I'm going to give up my coffee break, and that's because I'm trying to impress my master, my boss, my employer. I'm not trying to impress the rest of the employees. The rest of the employees there, they're all my competitors. All my competitors. And what I want to do is I want to show that I am the best competitor. I am the cheapest. I am the best. I produce more. Just like I told you the story here with Pat Conley. He produced my invoices, twice as many invoices for the same amount of money. And he got my business rather than Eichmann. Or not Eichmann. I guess his name was Eichhorn. It was Eichhorn, I believe it was. H-O-R-N. Eichhorn Printing. So the moral to the story is, if you're a truck driver for Walmart, who are you trying to impress? The rest of the truck drivers who aren't signing your check, or the Walmart company whose check they are writing. So I'm an old-timey trucker, see, and I knew that from my experience in the past that my customer, I used to haul a lot for a company called Western Sales, and when they had a sale, their sale would open on Thursday, and my truck had to arrive at their destination no later than 10 a.m. on Wednesday, the day before that thing started, and if possible on Tuesday, so that they would have time to unload it and get the product priced and so on. For me to arrive on a Thursday or a Friday, a day or two after the sale opened, was unacceptable. All right, now, with that in mind, you know, I want that business. I want that customer. That customer wants me to haul their stuff, and that's because I never failed. Never. If I had to drive 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to get the load there, then that's what it took. That's what I did. Union drivers don't do that. I did what had to be done in order to satisfy that customer's needs, because I knew that when he opened his doors for that sale, that he had to have the merchandise there. I knew that it had to be there before they opened the doors so that they could get it out on the floor. That customer's success is what made my success. If I fail, they fail. If they fail, they're going to get somebody else. And that's where reality is located. So whether you're a salesman or whether you're an order taker or whether you're a businessman or you're an employee, the bottom line is success is made from performance, not good intentions. Gee, I meant better. I meant to be there. I tried hard. I was working hard. I got a boy here. He's a wonderful boy. And he has the best excuses. I mean, you can give him a task and he'll fail. And it's almost predictable. And you know that he's going to fail. But he has very inventive excuses. And one day I said to him, I said, son, let me tell you something. I'm really not interested in your damn excuses. I'm interested in performance and success, because that's where we get our paycheck. Paychecks don't come from good excuses and good intentions. Paychecks come from performance. I was there early. The job was completed. We did more than was expected of us, and we did it for less. That's what success is built upon. Now, Americans used to do that years ago, and then we stopped. Okay, well, now we've got a Great Depression. Okay, that's the rewards that we get for making excuses and for having a good party. We've been on a party since the end of World War II. It's been a hell of a party. But now the party's over. That's the bottom line. So now reality is about to smash us right in the face. So I thought I'd share with you a couple of three of these ideas so that when reality smacks you in the eyeballs, number one, you'll know why. Or number two, you might take evasive action before you get smashed between the eyes, and maybe, and just maybe, you could prevent all of the pain, suffering, and anguish that comes from that. Now, let me tell you the Chevy Nova story. One time, I'm a young fellow, and I want to buy a car, so I went down to Alameda Chevrolet. That's off the Park Street Bridge on the left side, coming from Oakland into Alameda. You know, you're going across the bridge. On the left side, there's Alameda Chevrolet. I don't know if they're still there or not, but I hope they are. Now, I went in there, and I looked around, and I found a car, and it was a gray Chevy Nova. It's kind of a blue color, blue-gray. Then I looked at the car, and I took it out for a test drive, and when I got in the car, I noticed it had a quarter of a tank of gas. You know, normally when you get in the car, what's the first thing you look at? You start it up, and you look at the gas gauge, and you look at the oil pressure gauge, you know, is the battery charging, and, you know, how's the temperature? Temperature's down on cold. That's where it's supposed to be. And so the salesman and I, we went out, and we drove around a little bit, and we came back, and I said, well, there's a couple, three things here that I'd like you to fix. And I said, well, again, look at this, and look at that, another thing. And he said, you know, we'll fix all those things for you, sir. Very, very good salesman, a nice guy. Liked it, just like all salesmen are nice guys. Everybody likes a salesman. And so I said, well, I'll come by and pick it up when it'll be ready. He said, be ready Friday. So Friday after work, and I pulled into the Chevrolet garage there, Alameda Chevrolet. Hey, you got my car ready? Yeah, it's ready. And so I paid him the money, and I drove out. And when I drove out, I looked at the gas gauge, and I looked at everything, and I noticed that the gas was full tank of gas. Now, the reason that I'm making this report to you, that occurred back in 1964. Now let's see, this is 2009. That happened 35 years ago. 35 years. Now, in that period of 35 years, I probably bought 20 or 25 cars. I don't remember who I bought them from, and I don't remember whether the gas tank was full or empty when I bought them. I only remember that one. And you know why I remember it? Because it was the only guy that went above and beyond the call of duty. In all the years that I've been buying cars and trucks, that's the only guy that was a profitable servant. And here's why. You see, he did what he said he was going to do, and he fixed those things on the car that needed fixing, and he delivered the car on Friday, which was on time, and he delivered for the money that we agreed upon earlier in the week. But we had not agreed that he would fill up the gas tank. He did that on his own. So I paid him his money, and I drove out. Now, I don't know how many times I have recommended Alameda Chevrolet over the years, but it's probably hundreds of times that I have mentioned Alameda Chevrolet and Alameda, California, and told this story. And probably the owner back in 1964 died and went to heaven to be with Jesus, and all the salesmen are gone also. And today they're a bunch of crooks. I don't know. But I got to tell you that I was very satisfied. And I would go back there again today and buy a car. And I would recommend that you buy a car there based upon something that happened 35 years ago, for crying out loud. Now, that's called word of mouth. Word of mouth. Word of mouth is worth all of the advertising that you can buy with dollars. And that's because it's like a testimonial. Here's a guy that actually bought a car there, and he was happy with the car, more than happy, ecstatic, and he recommends them highly, that word of mouth. And that's where you want to be, boys and girls. You want to be number one in productivity, but you also want to have word of mouth working for you. This guy is a good guy. And people that complain all the time are not good guys. So people have a habit of complaining about their boss. Oh, they're complaining about Walmart. Oh, this Walmart, they're just terrible. They import Chinese goods, and Walmart's... Now, they're signing your paycheck every week, and you're working there every day, and you're bad-mouthing them all the time. What's that all about? You know, you ought to have something good to say about your boss. If you don't like your master, then why don't you quit? Why don't you say, Master, I think you're an unjust master. You got unfair labor practices over here, and I don't like you, so I'm going to leave. At least that's honest. But you have a duty to your master, and if you'll fulfill that duty, you're going to make him a prophet. You're going to talk civil to him, and you're going to talk civil about him. Because when you use bad complaining language about your master, you can rest assured that it gets back to your master, and he says, so that's what my employee thinks of me. So that's what old George is talking about behind my back. Here's what he really thinks about me. He takes my money every Friday, and then he's out bad-mouthing me and telling my customers that they ought to be buying from somebody else, and that I'm a crook, a liar, a thief, and a cheat. And there's no loyalty there. Now, notice here in the story of the unjust steward, there's an element of loyalty. And the rich man sees in his servant disloyalty. The unjust steward is stealing from him. He's disloyal. He's not working for his master's best interest. Now, when I work for an employer, I always work for my master's best interest. How can I make my master more money? How am I going to improve his product? How can I make customers come into my master's store as opposed to somebody else's? That's what loyalty is all about. Now, another factor here that I've observed that I want to point out, you people work for Chevrolet, don't you? And then you drive a Toyota. What does that tell everybody about Chevrolet? What does that tell everybody about your master? I mean, I could see you people working for Toyota down in Mississippi buying a Toyota automobile. That makes sense. But what kind of sense does it make when you're Tim Gaither, the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, and you're telling people out here that we're working hard for America, and we're just doing everything we can for you Americans and you taxpayers out there, but I drive a German car. Huh? Now, it would seem like to me, when I worked at International Harvester, I drove an international pickup. Did you know that? I demonstrated my loyalty to my master when I worked there by driving the pickup that my master was selling. And when I worked for my master, International Harvester, I was working hard to do those 5,000 trucks that I knew needed to be done in something less than 96 years. I mean, even a brain-dead employee could figure out that these trucks needed to be repaired in something less than 96 years. So I worked hard to figure out a way to do that for my master. And my master appreciated it. He kept me from losing my job when the union wanted to can me. But also learned another valuable lesson, and that is that for you and I, the little guys down here at the bottom, working for the big corporations and working for the unions is not good for you. It's probably good for General Motors. It's probably good for the United Auto Workers. But when it comes right down to, is it good for Joe Sixpack? Now weigh it out, and the answer is hell no. And that's why Joe Sixpack doesn't care if he drives a Toyota when he drives into the Chevrolet, the General Motors parking lot. And so as a result of that, Joe, when he comes to work, doesn't put in 8 hours of work. He puts in 7.5, and he makes sure that he gets all of his coffee and all of his donuts. Meanwhile, General Motors is losing market share. You people aren't working for your master. And when you don't work for your master, you're not even working for yourself. In your own self-interest, all of you employees that are working for General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, you know, in your own self-interest, when you go out to buy a new car, you Chrysler workers should be buying a Chrysler product. Now, we Americans have gotten it in our heads that we're going to take, and we're going to give nothing in return. Well, it's come back now to bite us in the hiney. Now, I'm not going to change millions of people's behavior, not even trying to. I'm just pointing out that, can you see what your problem is? You're like Joe Smith over here. You go out and you buy Joe Smith. Here, listen to this. He goes out and he buys an alarm clock made in Japan. Excuse me. How in the hell does buying a Japanese alarm clock benefit any Americans? It benefits the Japanese. Are those Japanese over there, are they buying American alarm clocks? Well, let me tell you about automobiles. The Japs are selling their cars over here in America, and we can't sell our cars in Japan. Did you know that? I don't know if you knew that or not, but I'll pass that one on to you. Now, there's a few cars over there, but they've got high tariffs, and there's only a few cars sold in return. You don't have free trade, and you don't have fair trade. You have monopoly trade in the favor of all of these foreign countries, which is engineered by your Wall Street bankers, which your creator told you not to do business with because they're a bunch of crooks. So here you are, an unjust steward doing business with crooked businessmen, and the crooked businessmen and the unjust stewards are all working together, screwing each other, and this is the result. It's called the Great Depression of the 21st century. How do you like that? Now, if you want to get off of that merry-go-round, then let's start talking about, if you're going to work for somebody, then let's be loyal to the guy that we're working for. Let's buy his products. Let's promote his products. Let's do everything that we can to make sure that our boss is making money, because if your boss isn't making money, how in the hell is he going to write your paycheck next Friday? Tom, wake up. If your boss isn't making money, how is he going to sign your paycheck next week? I don't know what it's going to take, but I guess a lot of unemployment, a lot of learning. This is the way this game has to be played. Now, you should be able to see now that free trade and multiculturalism doesn't work. Hasn't worked, isn't working, and isn't likely to work in the future. If you want to practice that, get after it. I don't care. Nothing to me. But I thought I'd pass this one on to you so that you could see some of the logic that goes behind it. The upholstery story, the unjust steward stealing from me. All that got him was canned with an admonition, don't do it in the future because the next boss is probably going to can also. Pat Connolly, he came in, he was working for me, put money in my pocket. He always got my business. The Chevy Nova story, Alameda Chevrolet. Listen, they filled up my gas tank. They went above and beyond the call of duty. They were profitable servants, and because they did that, I have been singing their praises for 35 years. And I don't even know to this day if Alameda Chevrolet is still there or not. I may be telling you, go to Alameda Chevrolet off the Park Street Bridge. Hell, they might have been gone for the last 20 years, but I was a happy, satisfied customer. And you know, if people are happy, satisfied customers, they come back and buy there again and again and again and again. We wouldn't be having an auto industry in turmoil if we were loyal to our boss. If we, as employees of those companies, if we were out here promoting their products and putting in a full day's work, and if we were profitable servants, they would be profitable companies, and they wouldn't be laying us off. Hey, I'm out of time here, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and the law school, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.